Big news. One generous Marketplace fan, Dr. Joe Rush from Florida, is offering to match the next $50,000 in donations to Marketplace. And every single gift gets us closer to a critically important May fundraising goal. So please give right now and double your impact thanks to this generous match. Go to marketplace.org/donate. Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy, and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million. On the program today, the last 5 days in this economy, because Friday, how we measure this economy, and various and sundry other stories as well. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today, the 15th of September. Good as always to have you along. Yes, we got an update on inflation, and we got one on retail sales this week, so data, but one misses the big picture if one does not talk about vibes. So we shall. Amara Mokwe is at the Wall Street Journal. Jordan Holman is at the New York Times. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai.
Hello.
So, Amara, let me start with you. As I said, we got CPI this week and producer price indexes. Inflation, you know, not down where the Fed wants it, but better than it used to be. Retail sales, gangbusters, I think is the word, and we'll talk more about it specifically with Jordan in a second. But here's what I want to know from you. Is there anything in this data that gives you pause, that makes you question the economic vibe right now?
Well, we saw headline inflation move higher during the month of August, mm-hmm. mainly because of gas prices.
Yep.
And what gave me pause is the fact that there are some upside risks, right? So inflation has been trending in the right direction, but there are some risks out there, you know, with gas prices. We know that means a lot for how consumers feel about inflation. And there are some signs that it could, that gas prices could tick up again. We have the UAW strike mm-hmm. In the Midwest. So all of these things that are kind of not great for the inflation picture if they take hold. But generally speaking, the inflation report did show that underlying pressures are mild, and that should encourage the Fed.
Are you, Amara, sorry, before I get to retail, Jordan, Amara, are you heartened at all by the fact that inflation expectations seem to be, as one Jay Powell likes to say, well anchored? Consumers are not expecting. Yeah, okay, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, that's encouraging, right? We saw that in the Michigan data today that people's inflation expectations tick down. And that's good, because if inflation expectations move higher, then that can kind of be self-reinforcing.
Right.
So that's a good sign. But again, inflation is not down to where the Fed would want it to be. And so, you know, they have more to do.
Okay, so Jordan, let's talk retail here for a minute. Up 0.6%, the reading this week, which is great because consumers are, of course, key to this economy. But here's one I want to know, and I'm actually looking at my computer here in the studio, the headline of an article you and Gina Smilek and a colleague wrote, "Will restart of student loan payments be the last straw for consumers?" Let me throw another couple of things in there. The UAW strikes that Amara mentioned, data from the San Francisco Fed a couple of weeks ago that consumers are running through their cash. How much longer, and I know I've asked you this before, but how much longer can consumers keep doing it?
I know this is like the question that everyone's trying to figure out. The student loan repayments is definitely throwing a wrench in things. For that story, I talked to some borrowers about how they're just preparing to start paying hundreds and in some cases thousands of extra dollars that they haven't had to pay over the past 3 years. And they said they're going to take things out of their fun budget, which is like
I'm sorry, their fun budget, F-U-N, fun?
F-U-N, fun, concerts, travel, and that's alarm bells for retailers or if you run Live Nation, Ticketmaster, all of those things. And so that's one thing that retail executives are are signaling to Wall Street saying that this could be a concern. This could be the breaking point for consumers.
Right. And when you take fun out of the equation, consumers just get cranky and nobody wants that. Amara, let me ask you that. Yeah, exactly. Amara, let me ask you this, though. On the strike, right, it is, and we're going to talk about it a little bit later in the program with Henry Epp, but it is for now strategic, right? The union says it's about 12,000 workers out of 150,000 in the UAW. How long do you think these strikes have to go on until it starts showing up in the bigger macro economy?
Yeah, I think economists would say that if they go on for several weeks, then that could start to show up in some of the data. It could impact GDP. We could also see it perhaps push up car prices, which for inflation, that would not be great, because one of the reasons that we've seen sort of core inflation move lower is because car prices had started to really come down. And so I think in the immediate term, economists are saying, you know, if it's short and not broad, it shouldn't have too much of an economic impact. But if it goes on, then we could start to see some effects.
Yeah. Jordan, we had Austin Goolsbee on the program a number of weeks ago, the head of the Chicago Fed, and we got into talking about data and how things are actually pretty good and all of that. And I said, so what are you waiting for? Why are you keep on raising rates? And he said, well, you know, things could get bumpy here in a little while. And he mentioned specifically the strikes from the UAW. And I guess I wonder, with repayments coming up and with the strike, are we kind of in that bumpy patch, do you think, that Goolsbee was talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things with all of this data that we're talking about is that it is having a psychological impact on consumers, even if they're not directly affected. Just seeing these headlines, you know, taking the auto strikes, like, oh, maybe that car I was thinking about purchasing, I just won't, because who knows what will happen. The interest rates are still high, right, all of those things. So when you put it together, I think that psychological impact is really having an effect on consumers, and that's not going away and hasn't gone away over the past year.
Yeah. All right, Amara, last one to you, and it's vaguely political, so, you know, adjust your thinking accordingly. This is a challenge now for President Biden, right, who is trying to make a turn from high inflation and challenges to Bidenomics and it working. And I guess my question is, how much time does he have, and do you think he can sell the economy? Look, the economy's good, but it's a challenge for him. His ratings are very low on the economy.
It's a tough thing, right? Because if you look at sentiment, people feel like inflation is might get better, but they also have endured like a year plus of higher prices, right? So it's a tough argument to make. And with this strike happening now, you even see the White House having to kind of, you know, balance the messaging, right? They want to be pro-union, but they also don't want this strike to have economic effects as they're trying to make the case that the economy is moving in the right direction. So I think you're going to just keep seeing the White House trying to push the message all the way through the 2024 election.
Right. And just super quick, the challenge is that trends, going back to where we were a year and a half, 2 years ago, transitory inflation does not mean that prices come back down when inflation goes down. Right, Amara?
Correct. And that's like the number one thing that I hear when I talk to people. Yeah. They're like, yes, inflation is slowing, but prices are still high.
Yeah, exactly. Amara Mokwe at The Wall Street Journal and Jordan Holman at The New York Times. Thanks, you two.
Thanks, Kai.
Thanks.
Have a nice weekend. Wall Street Today. Well, you know, let's just say there have been better days. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. I'm going to confuse you right now as I set up this next story, and I'm going to do it on purpose to make a point. Last month, the Department of Commerce, as it regularly does, updated its estimates of economic growth. The economy grew 2% in the first quarter. It also shrank 1.8%. It grew 2.1% in the second quarter, but it also grew only 0.5%. Turns out there are two ways of figuring the greatest economic indicator of them all, and they do not add up. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore makes it make sense.
Gross domestic product is how we measure the size and the growth of the U.S. economy. It is the sum total of all the finished goods and services in the country.
Consumer spending.
Your coffee this morning, part of GDP.
Plus investment.
The new bubble tea shop that just opened. GDP.
Plus government spending.
Military spending. GDP.
Plus net exports.
All the corn Iowa exports to Canada. GDP. It is the economic indicator of all indicators, and David Washausen is in charge of calculating it.
I'm the associate director for the National Economic Accounts at the Bureau of Economic Analysis.
Now, second opinions are a good idea for a lot of things, the size of the economy included, and there is more than one way to measure it. It can be all the money we spend, or it can be all the money we earn, because what you spend on coffee is what a barista makes in wages, and the coffee shop owner makes in profits, and the landlord gets in rent. If you look at spending, it is called GDP. If you look at income, it is called GDI, gross domestic income.
In theory, these things should align.
But guess what? They don't. Since 1947, there have been only 11 quarters where the spending number and the income number actually matched up.
That's because the GDP and GDI, they're based on just completely different data and independent sources of information.
Here is just one example. A company might spend a ton in spring on making new products, so you can get those spending numbers pretty quick, let's say. But it might not sell all of it till Christmas, so you get the income numbers a lot later. So for that, and a lot of other data-related reasons, you get two sizes of the U.S. economy that do not always quite match. But sometimes they really don't match. Earlier this year was one of those times. Stephen Brown is Deputy Chief North America Economist at Capital Economics.
So in annual terms, GDP is 2.5% higher than it was a year ago, but GDI is 0.5% lower than it was a year ago.
According to the spending version, GDP, the economy grew. According to the income version, GDI, the economy shrank.
So there's this very wide discrepancy.
And here is what makes some people nervous. Months, even years into the future, the BEA revises all of its estimates. The numbers change. And when you look in hindsight, according to some economists, a more pessimistic GDI is more likely to be right.
It's much more likely that GDP growth will be revised down to say that the economy is doing worse than we currently expect than it is that GDI growth will be revised up.
It doesn't always happen, and the BEA points out the data underlying the GDP number is more reliable, but if it is true this time, it would mean our economy isn't in quite as good shape as we think.
Really great example of this is 2007.
One version of GDP said the economy grew that year, the other said it shrank.
And we then know that we obviously had the worst recession since the Great Depression.
Brown sees signs of this in the labor market.
So we've had a lot of downward revisions lately, and it's suggesting quite a high risk that employment's also going to start falling.
He sees it in tax revenues.
Those have also weakened for the past three quarters in a running, which is much more consistent with the GDI data than the GDP data. You know, if the economy is growing, tax revenue shouldn't really be falling.
But on the other hand, there are positive signs in the economy. Surveys of manufacturing are improving, healthcare too. Consumers are still spending. That is all more in line with the more upbeat spending-based GDP. And various attempts to combine GDP and GDI suggest things are improving this year. But still, you know, which is it? Was the economy shrinking or growing these past few quarters?
The truth is probably somewhere in the middle at the moment.
Unfortunately, the middle is quite a large place right now. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
A quiz,
if I might. What do the following people have in common? Sundar Pichai, the CEO of Google, Jensen Huang of NVIDIA, and Elon Musk of Elon Musk. If you said they're all super rich guys who run American technology companies, well, yes, you would be right, but they're also immigrants. Pichai from India, Huang from Taiwan, Musk from South Africa. I bring that up because all three of them were in attendance at that AI forum the Senate convened earlier this week, and getting our artificial intelligence future right might well depend on getting immigration right, too. Here's Marketplace's Matt Levin.
If you saw the movie Oppenheimer, pro tip, you can leave after the first 2 hours. Anyway, if you were at least awake for most of Oppenheimer, you might have been surprised at all the foreign accents. That's because in the race to beat Hitler to the bomb, the Manhattan Project employed lots of nuclear scientists originally from outside the U.S.
We relied a lot on German talent and talent from other European countries. And that was really vital to advancing American national security interests.
Darrell West is with the Brookings Institution.
We're kind of in a similar situation today where we're in an AI race with China. Immigration can be part of that success story.
The good news is AI talent from around the world still wants to come here more than anywhere else. The biggest AI companies and AI paychecks are in Silicon Valley, and Stanford and UC Berkeley are leading AI research schools. The bad news is that when Baobao Zhang at Syracuse University surveyed AI researchers,
69% of those who currently live in the U.S. say that visa and immigration issues are a serious problem for their conducting AI research.
It's the same issues American tech companies have been complaining about for decades. A cap on the number of high-skilled visas, the Kafka-esque odyssey to a green card. To fix that, some lawmakers have proposed creating an AI visa specifically designed for AI talent. Zach Arnold at the Center for Security and Emerging Technology applauds the spirit of the idea, but
it can also be pretty difficult to predict exactly who is going to make a contribution. A lot of the really fundamental figures in AI in the U.S. have come into the country as children, as dependents, as refugees.
If the U.S. fails to attract and retain foreign AI talent, the biggest winner could be Canada. It's trying to be as accommodating as possible for immigrants with AI expertise. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
Love Matt Levin, though I do. I'm sorry, you got to stay the whole 3 hours for Oppenheimer. Anyway, coming up.
I feel like you can never be fully ready for the holiday season.
Yes, true, but also it is still September. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's down 288 today, 0.8%, 34,618. The NASDAQ down 217, that's points 1.5%. 13,708. The S&P 500 gave back 54 points, 1.2%, 44.50. For the week that was, the Dow up 0.1%, the NASDAQ down 0.4%, S&P 500 fell 0.2%. We heard from the misguided Matt Levin about the demand AI companies have for skilled talent from overseas. So, some AI stocks. NVIDIA sank 3.7% today. Microsoft dropped 2.5%. Palantir Technologies dimmed 3.1%. If you're a deep-pocketed fan of the late artist and public television hero Bob Ross, host of The Joy of Painting, take heart, the first painting he did for the show is now up for sale. Starting price, anybody? Anybody? 9.85 million simoleons. Bonds down, yield on the 10-year T-note, 4.33%. You're listening to Marketplace. Big news. One generous Marketplace fan, Dr. Joe Rush from Florida, is offering to match the next $50,000 in donations to Marketplace. And every single gift gets us closer to a critically important May fundraising goal. So please give right now and double your impact thanks to this generous match. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. Wayne, Michigan, Toledo, Ohio, and Wentzville, Missouri are the datelines on all the stories you've been seeing and hearing about the UAW strike that started in the wee small hours of this morning. One plant for each of the big three car makers. The actual not making of cars is going to be limited to just a couple of models at each company for now, but there are still people going to dealers looking to buy, and these strikes come as the whole industry is just starting to get out from under a couple of years of tight supply and high demand. Marketplace's Henry Epp made some calls today to find out when consumers and dealers might start feeling the pinch.
For the last few years, dealers at Stivers Ford Lincoln in Waukee, Iowa, were selling vehicles before they'd even made it to the lot, says President Scott Polite. But now, with interest rates dampening demand,
we think we'll be able to be okay as far as new car inventory in the near future, meaning 30 to 60 days. And beyond that, it's all going to be determined by what plants are affected.
It really comes down to how long does this strike last?
Jessica Caldwell is head of insights at Edmunds. She says if the strike drags out, it could set back an industry that's just recovering from those pandemic-era supply chain shocks.
So the fact that there is this major disruption coming so close to a major disruption, it sort of just throws everything off balance.
But for some dealerships, this is a time of year when business slows down anyway. Zach Roberts is general sales manager at Heritage Ford in South Burlington, Vermont.
I would certainly be more nervous if we were coming out of winter going into spring.
If the strike lasts a while, Roberts says there won't be much he can do to build up inventory of new cars, so he and other dealers may look to stock up on used vehicles. That could put a pinch on dealers that only sell used cars, like Best Auto Sales in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where Daniel Walsh is the sales manager.
So our purchase price is absolutely ridiculous at the auctions and where we buy our vehicles right now, and parts have skyrocketed also. So, yeah, it can kill us.
And he says it could put used cars further out of reach for the lower to middle income customers his business typically serves. I'm Henry Epp for Marketplace.
We dug into the retail sales data we got this week because that's what we do. And deep in there, page 6, column 2, about a third way down the page if you're the read-along type, there was something that caught our eye. Furniture sales were down nearly 8% last month from a year ago. Stalled home sales, dwindling consumer confidence, and the lifespan of an ottoman are among the causal factors, as Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes reports.
At Urban Links Furniture and Appliances in Baltimore, new and used pieces cover every inch of the floors and some of the walls.
Watch it here. These are sofa racks.
Owner AJ Venable opened the store in 2020. He says for the first 2 years, people were buying basically everything. These days, he says sales are down and customers are more price sensitive.
Used, everybody wants used because it's cheaper.
One reason customers are spending less is they feel less sure of their ability to afford furniture. Brad Thomas is a consumer analyst with KeyBank Capital Markets.
Consumer confidence is very important for all big ticket spending. Are you confident in your job, in your financial future?
Also, those ottomans and sofas we bought at the height of the pandemic, still good. Thomas points out upholstered furniture can last a solid 5 to 7 years. And with home sales down, we have fewer reasons to seek out new sectionals.
When you move into a new home, your home is likely to be a different size and shape and potentially a different style than where you lived before. And that's an important catalyst for home-related purchases.
Some in the industry are seeing stalled home sales influence the kind of furniture people are buying. That includes Seth Michael in downtown Baltimore, where the showroom is open by appointment only. One of the owners, Michael Wright, says people want more versatile pieces like sleeper sofas.
They're like, well, we're stuck here for a little bit. So people are just rethinking their spaces and how they use them.
Wright says they're capitalizing on people nesting if they're not moving. In Baltimore, I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
One of the big data points in a relatively data-light week has been retail, as we said. We talked about it up at the top of the program. We talked about it with Stephanie Hughes just now. Sales quite a bit stronger than expected, but not necessarily everywhere. We've got a regular rotation of retailers we talk to. Kalina Bruce, among them, she runs Noir Lux Candle Company up in Seattle.
I would say we're definitely in our slow season of business right now. So typically we see an uptick between October through kind of March, April, and then it starts to slow down. We're hoping that things are getting ready to pick back up for us this fall. I would say the service side, the candle bar, is where it's been a little bit slower during the summer. Retail's been pretty consistent. We've actually been having some really awesome opportunities to partner with different businesses. We actually had a lot of like party favors, wedding favors, things like that during wedding season. So retail tends to stay pretty consistent. We've been able to hire some folks and add new members to our team, which has been helpful. And we did a lot of vendors markets this summer where we literally were just every single weekend in the community trying to make up for, you know, the slowness that was happening in the shop. I feel like you can never be fully ready for the holiday season. We're definitely trying to anticipate, you know, an uptick in sales. I think we're ready. I think we're better positioned than we've been in the past.
Kalina Bruce, selling candles at Noir Lux Candle Company up in Seattle, Washington. This final note on the way out today, cause meet effect. Sabree did a story for us yesterday about IPO pricing, how companies set their share price for an initial public offering. The company in question yesterday was the chip design company Arm, which popped 25% on day one. Gave back a bit of it today, but the point is they had that pop. Watching from the wings, Instacart, which is set to start trading on Tuesday, the company bumped its proposed opening price today 8%. Got to get while the getting's good, right? Ticker is going to be CART, should you be curious. All right, we got to go. Here is your moment of economic context, though. Oktoberfest starts tomorrow in Munich. Beer by the Steinful for all my friends, but it is going to cost you the euro equivalent of $14.67 a liter, better than 4% more than last year. That is, though, below the overall eurozone rate of inflation. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Donna Tam is the executive editor. Neil Scarborough is Vice President and General Manager. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have a great weekend, everybody. We will see you back here on Monday, all right? This is APM.
Hey, everyone. It's Rima Khreis, host of This is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.